Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's Kelly Clarkson here to talk all things Wayfair, the best place to buy furniture, decor, and anything else you can think of to create a home you absolutely love. I know when I shop with Wayfair, I find options for every style, whether I'm feeling boho or farmhouse, modern, traditional, French country. I can find exactly what I need for my home and more. No matter your space, style, or budget, shop Wayfair.com to make your home way more you.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Hello again, fellow basement dwellers. This is your good friend Patrick O'Dowd welcoming you into another edition of Bandwagon Nerds. Bandwagon Nerds is, of course, brought to you as a part of the Chairshot Radio Network here on thechairshot.com, where we remind you to always use your head. Make sure you head over to prowrestlingtees.com/chairshot for all of your Chairshot swag needs. I am going to tell you all about my Saturday. Gentlemen, let me tell you about my Saturday. Dave's already heard this story. So, Tony, Ray, have you ever heard of a Jack and Jill party? Do you know what those are? Ray is puzzled. Tony, do you have those out in Wisconsin?
Is this where everybody puts their keys in a bowl?
No, it's not one of those parties. No, sadly. I wish it were.
Pineapples on the door and flamingos on the front lawn?
Upside down pineapples, too. Make sure you get it right. Cruise life, baby. All right. So out here in New England, they have this thing with weddings where the couples oftentimes will have what are known as Jack and Jill parties to help pay for various aspects of the wedding, just like whatever sort of financial shortcomings they need to manage whatever it is they're planning to do. And so what you do is if you're invited, you buy a ticket to the Jack and Jill. That costs usually around $20 to $25. You get a bunch of raffle tickets that you then go through and you put in a raffle for these various prizes. And then they have all kinds of games and stuff where you can get more raffle tickets to sort of up your chances for some of the better prizes. One of my best friends is getting married in December. So I attended this Jack and Jill at around 1 o'clock Eastern time the other day. I put my tickets in a raffle and I won a very lovely basket of whiskey, a full bottle of Knob Creek, like a big 9-year-old Knob Creek bottle of whiskey, 6 nips of various types that I could tell were put together by somebody who likes flavored whiskeys, because goddamn it, I don't need peanut butter flavored whiskey. I don't need maple flavored whiskey. I don't need these. Just give me the whiskey. I like the whiskey flavored. It's like, coffee flavored coffee is the same thing as I drink what's left of my morning brew before you all today as well. But anyway, So yes, actually that was one of the nips that I got was of Screwball peanut butter whiskey. So
Patrick,
I'll ship it to you, Tony.
No. Just a couple ice cubes, pour some in there, and then a couple drops of grape juice, and you're drinking a fucking peanut butter and jelly sandwich.
Cool. But I did get, and also a set of whiskey stones. I got a set of whiskey stones. So you put those in the freezer. Those are very nice. And then I got two awesome, my favorite part of the basket was two whiskey tumblers that say, what a fucking day, was sketched on the bottom. So like, you know, have a rough day, pull those bad boys out. What a fucking day. Anyway, very nice gift basket. And that was the best thing that happened to me on Saturday. Then I got home and I was like, I'm not going to touch the Bandwagon Nerds Rundown until I see this Illinois-Indiana football game. And then 63 points later, nothing hurts more. And it was funny. Tony sent me the sweetest DM this morning where he's like, I didn't want to say, but I thought Indiana would win comfortably. And my response was, I honest to God didn't think Illinois matched up well at all in this game. I didn't at all. Indiana, I think, is a real deal. I think they are the third best team in the Big Ten. I think that they're going to prove it because I think they're going to lose to Oregon, but I think they're going to beat Penn State. I absolutely think Penn State is a fraudulent football team that gets so wrapped up in thinking that Drew Aller is better than he is. Tony disagrees with me. I think Penn State is number four. I think Indiana is number three. And I think they're going to show it. I think they're really, really good. Tony, you can say no into the microphone. You can disagree with me. It's fine. But, you know, you wrote no on your whiteboard to let me know that you disagree. And then I think USC is the fifth best team in the Big Ten right now. I think Michigan's a little overrated. I think Illinois definitely proved how overrated it was as they were beat in all three phases of the game. The tipping point, actually the lowest point of the game, happened on the first series, where Illinois gave up a blocked punt, scoop, and score to an Indiana special teams that only had 10 men on the fucking field. So Illinois' absolute ceiling is 8-4, and I think they're more likely to go 7-5, 6-6. After seeing what I saw yesterday, they look broken. And I think, you know, big noon kickoff is coming. USC's coming into town. I think they're going to throw for a lot of touchdowns because the first six members on the Illinois secondary depth chart are injured. It's going to be fun, you guys. Anyway, that was my Saturday. So I was very much looking forward to today. The only nice thing that happened with watching that game is you hit a point where you're like, I already got mad. I got sad. And then just moved into an acceptance all over the course of a 63-10 drubbing so that I could write the rundown a little bit earlier. And we have quite the rundown today. We're going to talk Peacemaker. We've got to talk about the two biggest pieces of news in the entertainment industry. Both of them very, very interesting. Martin Scorsese's next film is a horror film. That's an interesting twist. And The Muppet Show got an update as well. We talked about it a little bit last week. So plus a couple of trailers. Not a strong trailer park, but to start it all off, we head to Peacemaker Season 2, Episode 5. I messed up, forgot to update the rundown from 4 to 5. Episode 5, where I want to start, while it took a little while to get there, what I predicted last week about why Chris goes back through the portal came to be, in that he goes to Harcourt, even though he fully knows it's a trap, just to ask her, was anything between us? Like, did you feel anything between us? She says no. He's emotionally immature, kind of dumb. So when she saves his life, he doesn't really pick up on it. And he's basically like, I'm tired of trying to redeem myself here. And he basically says he's out. And he goes away. That steps through that portal, leaves the device behind, hoping that that would allow the rest of the 11th Street crew to get back in the good graces of Argus. Little does he know that Harcourt actually does care for him, even though she doesn't admit it. And they're going to try to open that portal and get in there and get after him. I also learned that before I go on this show, I need to watch the entire show and see the snippets of what happens next week so that I don't look like an idiot when I'm trying to predict things that they show in the On Next Week thing. Because I like watched the show, but didn't watch the like coming up. And then later was like, watch the coming up. I was like, oh, derp. Guess I'm a dummy. But that was the overarching story here. We're left off with the gang looking like they're going to looking for a place where they can open up the portal. Following Chris into the portal, though, Duncan Munchkins, that following him in which I died. Dude, Tim Meadows got me hard when he said Duncan Munchkins, when he called him Duncan Munchkins. I died laughing so hard that Julie, the lovely and talented Julie O'Dowd, comes down and is like, "What's wrong with you?" And I'm like, Tim Meadows is kind of a treasure, and we need to be happy that this guy gets work. He gets to play this kind of role, because that was fucking hilarious. Yeah, and last but not least, Michael Rooker has the distinction of being the only actor cast by James Gunn four times and to die in four of his movies. So good job, James. Good job, Michael Rooker. And Eagly's greater than Crypto, period. Eagly greater than Crypto. Dave, you can't even argue it. You can't.
He's the alpha.
Oh, he's the prime eagle.
Prime eagle.
Sorry, well, you,
prime eagle.
Forgive my nomenclature. Yes.
But he's sponsored by Logan Paul's drinks and stuff. So, yeah.
Hey, but you can't deny it. Like, seriously, objectively better animal sidekick.
I mean, I don't know.
Keep trying.
I guess so. I mean, look, when I thought Eagly got shot, that was very devastating for me and my wife. She was very upset. And then when Eagly brings in the troops and there's certain people who get appropriate deaths, like Ramsay Bolton in Game of Thrones. And here, where this guy who's been picking on eagles all of his life, you live by the sword, you die by the beak, that sort of things. I thought, yeah, Eagly's badass. I'm not gonna lie about that. And Crypto's Supergirl's sidekick. So what are you gonna say about that?
Eagly greater than Crypto. That's what I'm gonna say about that.
Sounds like it could be an episode title. This was an excellent episode. I'm not Bordeaux is a kind of a cyborg, I guess. Is that what's going on with her?
And gets a little turned on by Revenge Floyd.
She does. She does. Does anybody really think Rick Flagg Sr. was not going to kill Chris in that conference room? Because I'm pretty sure he was.
No, I don't think he was going to kill him.
You don't think so?
No, because he's smart enough to know that if I kill him, I'll never find where the portal is. And if I don't find the portal, then this was a waste of my time.
Here's the only reason I would push back. Did you watch the little featurette after the episode?
No, where I never watched those.
James Gunn literally says that Rick Flagg is lying about the whole portal part, that he didn't care. Like, and I know how much you trust James Gunn, but that's another thing I actually don't like about the way HBO does these, is sometimes they have these little like featurettes after the episode where like the actors are talking about their motivation and their character and what's going on. And I really felt like James Gunn gave up like way too much of the ghost on some stuff because when I watched that in real time, Ray, I was like, okay, yeah, he does know. Like, he was playing it up. He was trying to convince Chris that he was a loose cannon and out of control. He didn't know Economos was going to book him. Like, he didn't know that. At least I don't believe so. Because Economos didn't even know he was going
to
do it.
But I will say the one thing that leads credence to what he was saying was they did have Jagger, Judo Master following him.
Yep.
And
yeah, it does.
So that gives a little credence to what he said. But if James Gunn said it and it matches on screen, I'm cool with it. What he says doesn't match on screen. That's my only problem. Do you think Rick Flagg really want that cyborg ass, though? That's what I want to know.
Here's the thing. The Flagg family are a bunch of whores, man. Like, they just, everybody, like, I'm sorry. Ladies, if you have hooked up with the Flagg, get yourself checked. Get yourself checked, because I don't want nothing falling off of you. Like, you don't, like, you get some sores, something like that. I don't trust it, because, I mean, you know, alien pussy is dangerous pussy, man. You don't want to mess with
it. He's not exactly the most discerning dog out there. I mean, we saw in Creature Commandos that, you know, what he's all
man
about.
Man whore.
That's true.
That's right.
Whoa.
He's the Hawkeye of the DCU, right, Ray?
Tony, should we trust any penis on a flag?
You shouldn't probably trust many people with penises. They tend to think with the wrong head. It's a fun episode. I don't know if he's going to kill him or not. He sure wanted to kill him. It's an interesting episode. I don't know. From what I've heard, the next three episodes are just supposed to be batshit crazy.
James Gunn has come out. And again, this could be hyperbolic, because I do think Gunn is prone to hyperbole. I very much believe this. And said that he felt like these next three episodes are some of the best things he's ever put on film. And again, I believe in hyperbole. I know that people can be hyperbolic, and I know he's hyping this. I'm the one, like, I know it's not that people have absolutely hated it. I have thoroughly enjoyed every single episode from like episode this. Like, Peacemaker Season 2 and Season 1 have been my two favorite things out of the DC Universe, out of Gunn's DC Universe. Like, I have thoroughly enjoyed them. I like this character arc. I don't think this is an unfamiliar story. I'm really interested in how the shoe drops now that Chris is back over there. Like, what is either wrong with this world, or, you know, when do the ramifications of what he's done, how's that going to come into play? And is it going to be a cliffhanger? That's my thing. Is this going to be a cliffhanger? Is something, what's going to be left hanging for Season 3 of Peacemaker by the time we get to 3 weeks from now when we're talking?
Well, I'll tell you this. I'm looking forward to Harcourt on Harcourt Crime, because it's happening. That's coming. Amelia had a great episode. This was her episode to me, because she hasn't really got a chance to show emotional range much in the past, in the season and a half we've seen. She's played a great role, but this hasn't a lot of emotional range. But seeing from the flashback at the beginning of her at the funeral, and Daddy Flag telling her that Rick was fucking everybody, but the only one he really liked was her, to then her trying to save old boy with the copacetic and being mad because he was too damn stupid to listen to the.
That's stupid, Ray. Stubborn.
Well, I'm sure a little bit of both if you ask her. But sure, stubborn. And then her scared of him getting killed, so her saving him, her forcing Economos to continue to save him, and then at the end, remember, it's not Adebayo, it's not Economos, it's not even Freddy, who wants to go back in the portal. She's the one who says, we're going to go get Chris. So that was a really, really cool way to kind of, in one episode, grow her character immensely. And it's not, I don't think it's lost that we start the episode with the flashback of her, and we end the episode with her and Chris in Fantasyland about to embrace.
And very cleverly. They will fuck.
Oh yeah.
Because next episode in the morning after is part of the next week. Couple of little nuancey things that I thought were great. So I just complained about this. So I'm gonna acknowledge that I just complained that I hate the vignette or the little like behind the scenes stuff after when it's done and giving up plot points. But a couple of things I thought were cool. So Tim Meadows pointed out one of the ways that his character is changing. If you watch his behavior throughout this episode as he kind of sees who Flag is. And he talks about the first time he met Economos and that they did a callback to that. And he mentions this, like, if you'll recall, when he first encounters Economos, he asks, you know, how do you want us to acknowledge each other? How do you want us to greet? And Economos is like, what? Like with a head nod? And he does like a little head nod like that. And when Economos and Harcourt are like looking at each other across the way after he's hit the warrant thing. And I'm sorry, I can't remember the character's name. Drink. Flory comes through and he's like, I like what you did, or you did. It's a, you did a good thing.
You did that. Yeah.
It's a good thing that you did that. And then he head nods. He head nods at Economos.
Great point.
And
great point.
You know, Tim Meadows talks about it a little bit. He's like, this is Flory starting, like, he wants to be in, it, to steal from Hamilton, he wants to be in the room where it happens, but he doesn't. He also sees that Rick Flagg Sr. is out of control and that there's a danger there. Go ahead.
Can I touch on the most underserved part of this entire series that is on purpose, because I think it's going to be a major part of the end of the series?
Go for it.
Man, Adrian is about to lose his mind.
Right.
Because he thinks he's best friends with Chris. Adebayo's best friends with Chris. Every single chance he gets, Chris keeps throwing in his face that it's really Adebayo. The boy breaks down like in tears that Chris is gone. They're about to go get him. And I think he realizes that he's starting to realize, because he's a few fries short of a Happy Meal, right? But like, he got enough fries in there to understand that I need some more fries. Does that make sense?
Did you know that manta rays are born like a burrito?
I know we're sad, but you want to lighten me with some manta ray facts? No, bro.
He's the expert on all things nature related. Don't you know that,
really?
Rick?
Really? The new Steve Irwin.
I actually love that you brought up Adrian and Adebayo, because this was the other thing, which, by the way, I heard the actor who plays Adrian speak for the first time, and that blew me away. I was like, wait,
so
you're British? Okay. and like really strong accent.
Hurt my heart,
So when I was just really impressed. I was like, damn, he's good. But he talks about actually that moment when Chris is gone and he is crushed. And he talks about how he sees Adebayo as a rival. But in that moment, who comforts him?
But she's the heart of the group.
Right. And I do, though, you know, she's needs to, you know, maybe pay a little more attention on the phone when people are calling her about her business. Well,
have you ever been asked about Greek before?
I mean, a couple of times. And what I do in my spare time is not for this podcast. I'm just saying.
We listen and we don't judge.
That's right. The only way that would be better is if the person on the other line was Tim Meadows' character, but doing it Leon Phelps style so that we could do it in the butt.
But, yeah.
Is love not like the unlikely likeliness of a lover taking another lover by the hand?
So I agree with Tunney. I don't know, Ray or Dave, how you felt overall about this episode, but I thought this was a really strong episode of the season, arguably the strongest of the season so far. And we only have three to go.
It's 12 episodes, isn't it?
Is it 12?
28. Eight.
I think I made that mistake.
That's right.
Like
Google had it wrong. Yeah.
Right. Because I looked it up and it was like, oh, 12. We're only halfway there. And now I'm like, oh, shit, we're almost done. But I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to seeing what happens next. And I hope that James Gunn's not lying. I hope he's not blowing smoke and that these next three episodes really are amongst the best he's done.
You think about what they've set up, though, it should be, right? Like,
I agree. I think it should be great.
You know, Peacemaker's trying to acclimate himself fully into that world with thinking there's no going back, right? He doesn't have the little purse with him anymore, the little, you know, alien carry-on. But little does he know that his three sidekicks are coming after him. And then we also got Hot Flaming Cheeto Boy in there too doing shit.
So before we close the shop on this and move on, do you guys want to give like one possible prediction of what might happen towards the end of the series? Because I think
everything works out.
That's a hell of a prediction, because that's damn sure not happening. But you know what? What's the odds of that are like what is it, minus 22,000 or whatever? I think at the end of this, Brother is coming back to the regular universe.
I think it's a fair prediction.
You think he'll bring Keith with him to his universe?
I don't think he'll bring Keith. I think Keith will come over, because I think Keith is going to end up becoming a bad guy, because he doesn't like the fact that Chris killed the real Chris and he lied to him the whole time. Because I really truly think if Chris would have told him what happened, he'd have been cool.
Yeah,
like, an honest assessment. Yeah.
And I think that, you know, well, it'll be interesting to see if both Brother and Dad, or if it's just Brother, because Robert Patrick has been such a great part of this show for a season as well. I don't know if it makes sense for them both to come, but we'll see. Dave, what about you? You got anything?
I love the episode. I'm really looking forward to seeing what happens with the last three because there's so many things that need to be resolved. The stuff with Augie and Keith, you know, we know that they're only alive in one universe. So that is a little bit of a cleaner transition if that happens. But yeah, you've got multiple Harcourts. That's got to be resolved. So how does that all work out? But yeah, I'm wondering where this is supposed to tie into Man of Tomorrow, if you believe what Gunn has said. So something's got to happen in these last three episodes that set that up, right? So yeah, it's going to be a fun ride for these last three episodes, that's for sure.
I actually don't think it's anything to do with the universe they're in. I think it has everything to do with the universe that weird alien that keeps disposing of stuff comes back from.
Yes.
But that's just my guess. So, all right. Putting a bow on that one. Looking forward to episode 6. So much fun. I'm glad that everybody seemed to enjoy this one. We have a stripped down to the bone trailer park this week. We only got two that I felt were worthy of the bandwagon. One because Dave put it in there. The other one because I kind of laughed and had a good time watching this. So, Dave, we have to rely on you and your lone banjo once again. So I ask you, sir, to play that beautiful banjo. All right. Thank you, Dave, for the beautiful banjo. And gentlemen, I hate to acknowledge this. Sparse trailer park this week. Just two trailers in the park. Everybody else moved out. Everybody left. They went to a different part of Oklahoma to park their trailers. Today's trailer park. There's two left. Two very different style of trailers, too. One, a horror trailer, and the other one that made me laugh. Both, one shared by Dave, the other shared by me. These were the only two trailers kind of worthy of being in the trailer park this week. And we're going to start with a trailer that I initially thought, and I fully admit, Dave, you shared this in our chat. I didn't watch it until I was, fully mourning the season that is for the University of Illinois football program. And so I saw the name of it. It's a series. It's hitting Netflix called True Haunting. And I was like, oh, this is going to be like the Haunting of Hill House series or The Raven or not The Raven. Yeah, it was The Raven. It's going to be something like that. Or The Fall of the House of Usher. That's the series I was thinking of. It's going to be their annual, because Netflix kind of has like this annual horror thing. And then I hit play and I find out this is a completely different show. That it is brought on by one of what I believe is one of the most overrated horror directors in all of cinema currently. A guy who I think got huge based on one great movie and has made a lot of really mediocre movies ever since. And that being one, Mr. James Wan, who, yes, he gave us Saw. Saw was an awesome movie. I think that a lot of his horror stuff since then has been okay, but not nearly the genius that some would have you believe him to be. But this series brought to you by James Wan, and it's called True Haunting, and it appears to be an anthology series, very similar to some other shows that I'm actually, frankly, a little more interested in. Like, there's one on HBO right now from 2024 called Florida, Man, and it's a little anthology series of actors reenacting famous, whacked-out stories from the state of Florida, because Florida, Texas, and Ohio, they seem to have the best crazy stories out there when you really look at it. Florida, probably at the top. You always hear about a Florida man did blah, 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 blah. This is not that. This is actual haunting stories from, I'm assuming, across the United States, maybe across the world. I didn't get the sense that it was outside of the United States, though. But like haunted house stories that people have reported and appear to be interviewed and talking about. But then James Wan using his directorial skills and actors to then reenact and play these for the small screen. Now, we do have PC Tunney, big fan of horror, resident expert, loves watching these shows. He loves them so much that I don't know that we need to get a lot out of him, because he just shows up in his feelings on this horror anthology.
Is this like standalone stories, right? So like each episode contains its within itself?
Yeah, that's what it seems to look like. It seems to look like that there's each episode is a different haunting across the country that's been reenacted.
Like, I probably won't watch this, but the Florida man thing sounds very interesting.
Right? Florida man. But and very similar to like Unsolved Mysteries, I would say. Episodic. Each episode is different, unique, and all to its own. Dave, you shared this trailer. Why? What is it about this trailer that appealed to you? And when will we get the UFO so that you can then talk about on your podcast on the Chairshot Radio Network?
I added the trailer because it does look interesting, because anytime you get these based on a true story sort of situations, it adds that element to the horror involved. Well, this is kind of, how much of this is true? How much of this is dramatized? I like the fact that they're taking these horror stories and they are, bringing them to life on the screen, so you can actually see in excruciating detail some of the more horrific elements of what some of these people are talking about. I don't anticipate they're going to do anything UFO related, because Netflix has got, they've got enough of UFO related stuff on there already. They do a lot of, Netflix is very good as far as, the sort of aspect of these stories that are uncertain, paranormal in nature, unexplained mysteries. They're very good at that. Prime is the place to go for the UFO documentaries. They've got a bunch of them.
Got you.
But this looks like it's going to be a very good show. It is spooky season. And so when I saw it coming, I said, yeah, this is right in our wheelhouse. I know Tony will have them all watched the second they drop, but, it'll take you and me a little bit longer to get caught up, Pat, but it'll be okay.
I know. That's why he's the resident horror expert. He's such a fan. We just can't have him comment on the shows. We just can't because he's too embedded. He's in too deep. Okay. So
keep the wind chimes out of it and you'll be all right.
Right. Okay. So let's get to this next trailer, which I watched with the little O'Dowd. And the little O'Dowd was like, well, this looks like a lot of fun. America's favorite cartoon character, Jack Black, is back, along with America's ageless wonder, Paul Rudd. And they are doing a comedic remake of the seminal late 90s classic starring Jennifer Lopez and John Voight, Anaconda. Ice Cube? Was Cube? It was Cube, not T. You gotta get your ices right. It was Cube. Ice Cube is in that movie. Or not, is Owen Wilson? Not Owen Wilson. Yeah, Owen Wilson's in that movie too, right? How can I look it up?
I don't remember. It's been a long, long time since I saw that one.
I have the internet. Tony's got the internet. He's already looking. He's going to ask Grock. That's what he does.
Hey, Grock.
I wanted to hate this trailer. I did want to hate this trailer. It made me laugh a lot. And then I had to explain to the little O'Dowd that, hey, little O'Dowd, this is based on a movie that took itself very, very seriously.
Jennifer Lopez, Ice Cube, John Voight, Eric Stoltz, Jonathan Hyde, and Patrick was right, Owen Wilson.
Nice.
God, that hurt to say.
Patrick was right. It's because, you know, it's funny. You'd think after all these years, you'd get used to admitting I was right. But anyway, I laughed. I enjoyed this trailer. You know, is it a go see it in the theater experience? Probably not. But it was definitely like the little O'Dowd was like, well, this intrigued me. I'm like, well, maybe we should watch it. And he was like, maybe when it's on HBO. I'm like, okay, we can look into that. Tunney, you were a big fan of Anaconda, right?
I actually saw
Anaconda. Don't want none.
On the movie theater. I was more of a fan of Lake Placid. Remember that one with the crocodile and the grandma?
With Betty White.
That was just a fucking really underrated good movie.
I hope it kills all of you.
So, yeah. This looks okay. This looks okay. I won't watch it, but it looks okay. I don't have time for this bullshit.
Sure you do.
Everybody
has time for comedy.
I do not have time for this movie.
Come on.
I don't.
Boo.
I do appreciate the Steve Zahn come on from Saving Silverman, though.
Right. Come on.
Yeah. All right.
Come on.
But he's in this movie, so there you go.
I don't answer the door when I'm eating.
Full circle.
You get them all stuck together, it's one nacho.
Well, we got summer monster trucks and summer porn, and well, summer a little bit of both.
Dave,
you know, it looks insane, but with a cast like that, I mean, you've got Jack Black, Paul Rudd, Steve Zahn. I mean, right there, it's already got jumped up on me on that one, but on the cast alone, that the ridiculosity of all of it is notwithstanding, but it looks like good, fun schlock. And with that cast, how are you going to really miss that badly, right? So, yeah, I'm like you. Am I going to run out and watch this in the theaters? No. But, you know, on a night where I get to sit around and just kind of like have nothing to do and check it out on streaming, sure. This looks fun enough.
Right. It was hilarious. Can we back to the original Anaconda film? Is John Voight's accent the worst accent in film history? Oh, it's pretty bad, man. It's pretty bad. He's got like the contact lens, like milky eye thing. And we are supposed to believe that like John Voight is, well, they're in the Amazon, right? So like Colombian or I don't even know. He's definitely supposed to be South American. And I'm returning that. I'm not buying it. Sorry, John. I do not believe you. But Anaconda remake, a remake nobody needed to be made, but one that is being made anyway. Let's see. Okay, I do it. When they're using what the presumed dead Jack Black as bait, and they have like a warthog or something on his back. Come on, that shit was funny.
Can I say this? There's a lot of Tropic Thunder in this trailer, right? The whole kind of like, we got to go and film this thing, but the shit gets real, and it's kind of like you get the warthog.
They cut the anaconda head off.
That's right. Which is Ben Stiller with the whole panda thing on his head. And I'm like, there's a lot of Tropic Thunder wedged in here. So, like, cool.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. Again, maybe not a movie theater fun, but a lot of fun nonetheless. All right, we're going to head off into our first commercial break. Come back. Start talking a little news around the Nerdosphere, some upcoming films and specials, and the Warner Brothers saga, which I think is going to be fascinating. All of that and more. You're listening to Bandwagon Nerds here on the Chairshot Radio Network, part of thechairshot.com.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
It's Kelly Clarkson here to talk all things Wayfair, the best place to buy furniture, decor, and anything else you can think of to create a home you absolutely love. I know when I shop with Wayfair, I find options for every style, whether I'm feeling boho or farmhouse, modern, traditional, French country. I can find exactly what I need for my home and more. No matter your space, style, or budget, shop Wayfair.com to make your home way more you.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
This is your boy, Kenny Killer, telling you to make sure you check out thechairshot.com, bringing you breaking news, interviews, podcasts galore, everything pro wrestling. Make sure you check it out, thechairshot.com.
Welcome back, everyone, into Bandwagon Nerds here on the Chairshot Radio Network, a part of thechairshot.com, where we remind you to always use your head. Patrick O'Dowd, PC Tunney, David Ungar, you'll notice Ray had to step away. We miss you and love you, Ray. Take care of your business. But we are back. Remember to head over to prowrestlingtees.com/thechairshotinvest and a chair shot shirt. But gentlemen, I put this out last week and was like, I'll believe it when I see it. And that was the rumor circulating that there was going to be a revival of the Muppet Show led by Seth Rogen. We got it. News in the form of an article based on a tweet from Disney Plus and Muppets related websites and everything in between. I shared the tweet that it's, you know, to do the GIF. It's happening. The Muppet Show, at the very least, is getting a special coming to Disney Plus, and it's the Muppet Show with our very special guest star, Miss Sabrina Carpenter. Yeah, I buy that. I'm in. It's the exact type of character. It's the exact type of actor, actress, celebrity personality that works with the Muppet Show based on what I've seen of Sabrina Carpenter on a stage. Now, will it be the sexiness? No. But that woman can pratfall with the best of them. One of her biggest shticks on her stage routine is like accidental things happening that take her clothes off. Well, you can do accidental things that are happening with her that probably keep her clothes on. Sorry, Tony. Maybe she'll, you know, peddle a new Dunkin' Donut flavor or something like that too. But I think this is a good personality to have with this show. And I think it's a test the water special to see if they really want to do it as a streaming service or as a streaming series. Gosh, I'm having a stroke. I'm not having a stroke. I'm fine. My phone thinks I'm talking to it though. Again, I have a lot of nostalgia for The Muppet Show. I love The Muppet Show. I'm going to watch this. I'm going to be lined up. I can't wait to see Gonzo, Fozzie, the Swedish Chef, Miss Piggy. Hopefully, I don't need Bean. Bean is like the biggest waste of space, that stupid bunny. But give me, oh God, I'm going to forget the crawfish's name. What is his name? You know, Pepe. Pepe the Shrimp is going to be there. Camilla the Chicken. Give me Scooter. Give me the, you know, Dr. Teeth and the Electric Mayhem. Give me it all. And Sabrina Carpenter right there in the middle of it all. That makes a ton of sense. Dave, you have to have a place for the Muppet Show in your heart. I refuse to believe that you don't. What's your thoughts on Sabrina Carpenter being the first guest host to try and revive the Muppet Show? Because I think it's a stroke of genius. Because I think that is somebody that is relevant to a younger audience, and they need that. You can't have like Dom DeLuise, rest his soul, or somebody like that. Like, you know, like some middle-aged famous person.
No, you hit it exactly where I was going with that, is that she is going to appeal to a younger audience, a new audience. And she's going to be able to get people in, you know, invested, because, you know, for people like us, the Muppets are great. They're nostalgia. It's all that sort of stuff. It's fun. It brings back those great memories. But for a new generation on Disney Plus, where you're trying to say, well, how can we get a new crop of kids interested in the Muppet Show? You bring in a very recognizable person who resonates with the younger audience. So it's a very smart strategy. I would not be surprised to see her bring in some of her friends, you know, things like that to keep that sort of mode and motif going right now. So I think it's a very smart move on their part. Like you're saying, yeah, you can't bring in, I mean, yeah, there's older characters that are going to be iconic enough that they're going to just cross generational lines, but you don't start off with that. That's for sure. And I think it's a smart move to bring in somebody like Sabrina Carpenter to just attract that audience.
Bridge that gap, so to speak. Tunney.
Yes.
I don't know. I love it, right? Like I want it to be here. I love the Muppets. I love it, Muppet Babies. I love the movies. I don't know if it maybe shouldn't be more of like a special, like 6 times a year, like holidays and things of that nature, like kind of like Charlie Brown instead, because they tried to do this, what, 10, 12 years ago, and it was on network television, and it was under the premise that Kermit was the host of Miss Piggy was the host of a late night show, and Kermit was the producer, right? And you'd have people come and go, and that's how you got your guest stars in and out. And I thought that was really clever, but that didn't make it either. I don't think you can just have it be the Muppets with a guest every week. There needs to be something inside of it or along with it that the Muppets are the hosts for, you know, whether it's cartoons or sketches or musical performances. I don't know. I don't think it's going to end up, if it does, it's not going to be more than a season or two. I just don't see this turning into anything like that. Honestly, I would say like, hey, let's have a holiday special. Let's have a Thanksgiving special. Let's have a Halloween special. Let's have a 4th of July special. Let's have a spring special. Let do stuff like that. I think would be really cooler and less saturated than doing something weekly, you know, for a portion of each year.
Yeah, I will say the thing that I loved, the original Muppet Show was a variety show. It was like a 70s variety show just with the Muppets and the guest host. It was like Saturday Night Live. I would even say it was very similar to Saturday Night Live. And a lot of times they would have a musical guest who would perform a couple of tunes. So not knowing what it is yet, though, you know, if it follows that format, can it work? I don't know. It's like
this is Seth Rogen, right?
Right. Doing like, and so if he does it with the sketch comedy style of the original show, we'll see. I'm like you though, Tony. I'm skeptical that it's a long-term show because it just has been proven time and time again not to work.
Doesn't like specific points throughout the year, every year, lend this to, you know what I'm saying? Like
it could, yeah.
Think about like Charlie Brown, right? Like Halloween's coming up. Okay, we're gonna have Charlie Brown. We're gonna have Christmas Charlie Brown. You know what I mean? Like I think it could survive there.
Sam the Eagle presents 4th of July with the Muppets.
Sam the Eagle presents Tax Day.
Yeah, that too. A salute to all nations, but mostly America, is still the favorite part. My favorite part of Sam the Eagle and the Muppet Vision 3D video that no longer exists at Disney World. R.I.P. Okay, next film, Martin Scorsese, usually a name that we associate with mafia films, you know, Goodfellas, The Irishman, those sorts of films, Robert De Niro, Al Pacino, those sorts of doing a film based on a ghost story. A book called What Happens at Night, allegedly starring Leonardo DiCaprio and Jennifer Lawrence. Now, Scorsese and DiCaprio have worked together before. I'm not sure if Lawrence has worked with Scorsese. I wish I could say I'm more familiar with Martin Scorsese's like filmography outside of like his biggest hits, like things he won the Oscar for and whatnot. But thoughts on adapting a ghost story for his next project. Dave, I'm going to start with you this time.
It could work. You've seen what was Peter Straub. Remember that book Ghost Story? Many, many years ago that got adapted and was well done. This is one where I know a lot of times we say that the source material doesn't necessarily matter. I think in a situation like this where you've got a well-renowned director who's known for a certain style of filmography is now going to dip his toes into a different genre, I do think in that respect, the source material becomes much more important. Because if you've got a really good ghost story and something that's a really good hook, that's not just, you know, I don't want to see Martin Scorsese do some slasher bullshit. Give me something with that psychological horror, that quiet terror, that sort of thing. So, he's got the directing chops to pull it off. And if you're talking Leonardo and Jennifer Lawrence, you can't really go too wrong there. But I just think it really just is good. I've not read this book that he's talking about or the underlying source material. So I'd like to check that out. You know, Is it gothic in nature? Is it something that's more psychological? Is it strictly supernatural? Or are we dipping into the spirituality sort of thing? So that's my thought. It really just depends on the source material for something like this.
It sounds like they're a couple and they're traveling to Europe to adopt a child, and where they're staying is filled with these characters that are haunting them. So it's like a haunted European hotel, I guess, kind of thing. Anytime you have this kind of talent, as far as, you know, male, female leads and director, especially when you're, like you say, the source material is already acclaimed, this should be knocked out of the park. Yeah.
This is
like the follow-up to Killers of the Flower Moon or some like kind of close to that, where they work together.
I just pulled up his directorial filmography, and there's so many films I didn't know he directed, but I mean, they did Killers of the Flower Moon they did together. They did Gangs of New York together, obviously. They did The
Love
Wolf
Gangs
of Wall
of
Street
York.
Together, which
another great
I
one.
Completely forgot. Shutter Island, which was his last little run into supernatural, whatever, you know what I mean, even though it was basically a sort of therapy. The Departed, The Aviator, him and DiCaprio have worked together so much more than I gave them credit for. Though my favorite thing that he ever directed, Michael Jackson's Bad Video.
Yeah.
Back in the day. Who knew? I didn't know. I should know, but I didn't. Favorite Scorsese film, Dave? Is it still Goodfellas?
Yes. I don't think that's going to change.
I don't know. Casino, man. It's pretty good. It's pretty good.
Casino's very good, but it is not, to me, my personal opinion, it is not on the same level as Goodfellas. But that's just me, you know?
Fair enough. You got a favorite Scorsese film? You did say you liked a lot of the ones that I was rattling off, Tony. So
I think it's between Goodfellas and Casino.
I watched Casino because of the movie Swingers, where they talk about the Steadicam shot walking through the back of the casino, and then they reproduced it in the movie Swingers.
Patrick, you're money. You're so money. You don't even know
it. I'm so money and I don't even know it. I get so angry with Jon Favreau in that answering machine scene and the answering machine and the phone call scene. Like, that is such a well done, excruciatingly painful and awkward scene where it's just like, oh
so,
my God, bro.
You know, it's interesting how life goes, where now in my mid-40s, I am known for being at the diner between 5:30 and 7 a.m., right?
Yeah.
Getting ready for this show, eating my breakfast. Whereas in my 20s, I was known for being at the diner at like 2:30, 3, 3:30 a.m. Many a times getting up on my seat and doing the Vince Vaughn, so I'm the asshole here monologue. Yeah. So yeah, it's really interesting how life brings you full circle. Hey?
It is crazy. And speaking of crazy, the Warner Brothers company. Man, okay, so last week we had a story and a rumor that Paramount, fresh off of picking up, I can't even remember who they merged with, Sundance. Paramount Sundance was now buying and making a cash offer to purchase Warner Brothers Discovery. That was then followed up by a story and a rumor that Warner Brothers expects multiple companies, and that this is the goal, is to sell Warner Brothers to somebody. And that then led to a news story this week that Netflix is rumored to want to purchase Warner Brothers themselves, which would be massive. And once again, begs the question, what are we doing here? If Netflix owns Warner Brothers, is HBO dead again? Oh no, we suck again. Does HBO Max just get absorbed in Netflix? Do we continue to have these separate? And who knows? Because nothing has happened, right? Nothing has happened yet. Somebody is going to buy Warner Brothers Discovery. That seems very clear at this point. That company is on the block to be sold. It seems like now the question is, who's going to make the best offer and do it?
If HBO gets absorbed in Netflix, that's even more reason to get rid of satellite and cable or whatever the fuck's going on. Not to mention the gigantic debacle that was logging into the ESPN Unlimited app on Saturday evening. Let me tell you right now.
Let me tell you that I couldn't even do it.
So here's the thing, and I'm sorry to sidetrack, but this is totally about streaming and what we talk about. But I was deceived because earlier in the week, I've downloaded the app on my PlayStation and I used my login and it logged me in, and I could watch Stephanie's Places and I could watch Eli's Places and I could watch all the college stuff and I could watch all the 30 for 30s. But when it came to WrestlePalooza, you had to have an ESPN Unlimited subscription. So, or or your cable, DirecTV, or YouTube had to be linked with your Disney plan, and that had to include that. So either way, you had to pay for it. So basically, I'm sitting here trying to figure out the password to all my other stuff, right?
Before
and
it was
just going crazy. That would have been a lot easier.
Sorry.
I even called DirecTV. They're like, it's an ESPN problem. I go, okay. And I just hung up the phone. So basically, yeah. I already had a Disney subscription and a Hulu subscription that it wasn't together. So I went in and logged everything in and changed all my shit, brought it all together. And now it's all under my Disney Plus thing where I log in. And it has all the portals there in one spot, which is great. So that's fine. Whatever. And now I'm going to reassess my DirecTV plan and things of that nature. But yeah, completely missed the opening live to what I wanted to see. Ended up having to skip a match to get live. But yeah, not thrilled about it, but okay with it now.
To follow up on that, is your current DirecTV plan Dish or is it streaming?
I have an actual Dish.
So that's what it is, because I learned that the hard way. In order for your ESPN subscription
to work,
it has to be DirecTV streaming. And unlike you, I was like, well, fuck that. I'm not even going to watch WrestleMania in a couple years anyway. So,
which is so stupid because I have my...
Because that's a lie. They lie.
I have my Wi-Fi through them too, right? Everything. Right. So whatever, it's fine. They're just going to get less money now because I can go through that plan. I don't need all the extra sports stuff. I have it now here, you know?
Right.
Like we said, it's almost getting to the point where all the network stuff is going to be on all the streaming stuff you have, and you don't need cable or satellite. You just get a batwing antenna for your local stuff when you want to turn that.
Yeah, it's basically cable now. Like, that's the thing. Cable didn't go away. Cable just turned into streaming services. And it's like...
Facelift. Botox.
And this is the whole thing, is all these people are like, we cut the cord. We're saving all this money. Unless you said, fuck all entertainment.
Ass implants.
You did not. You did not get one over, and ass implants or otherwise did not happen.
She didn't like his ass. She didn't get butt cheek implants.
Back to this story, because Patrick doesn't want to go there, and I'm not on vacation. I might be missing next week's show, so you can talk about ass plants all you want.
Tune in next week.
The tribal chief returns.
It's Mrs. O'Dowd's birthday.
How many dates does Patrick? Hey, Dave.
It's Mrs. O'Dowd's.
Dave, how many more dates does Patrick have left in 2025?
It depends on how much New York wants to pay to have me appear. If they can get a hold of Nick Khan, let him know how much I'm worth.
I got to talk to Nick about that.
You better talk to Phoenix. That's where you need to talk.
Right. Reach out to Phoenix. Find out how much my last appearances are worth.
Milwaukee makes a lot of decisions, but not as many as Phoenix. Let's just put it that
way. Fair enough. Point being here, this is just another step in the great conglomerate that is the joke that is entertainment, like in how we get it, Dave. And at this point, I saw a graphic, and I can't remember, or a post, and I don't know if it's true or not, but that in the span of like 30 or 40 years, we've gone from like 20 or 30 different like production companies of content to like 8. I remember when I was in grade school and in social studies, they would teach you about monopolies, and they would teach you about what's the other one that I'm thinking of? Basically, where companies would like one or two companies would own every aspect of that company. But there were a couple of different types, and one monopolies was the big one, you know, turn into a famous board game and all of that. And we used to learn that, you know, Teddy Roosevelt like busted up monopolies because we needed to change things.
We need competition.
And now capitalism has turned into the snake that's ate its own tail, as that competition has now created monoliths. And that's where we are. It's a lot of monoliths.
I mean, I think the notion of Netflix buying Warner Brothers is fascinating to me. Really, because they get the whole HBO library and all that kind of stuff, and not to bring wrestling into this conversation, but oh my, are the AEW fans panicking about this? And for good reason, because if Netflix buys HBO Max, you know, they just did this deal, which is not really a deal. I mean, you know, you're still paying for pay-per-views at a reduced rate. But what do you think Netflix? What do you think Netflix?
$38.99.
Oh, $38.99. What a bargain. But their fans are going to take to X and bitch at everybody. You paid WWE $30 for that shit and everything else I got with it. Yeah, you know, the thing is, It's the big thing about this I'm taking away from this is that it is clear that Warner Brothers Discovery is up for sale. Disputing that, there's no debating about that. That is not a mystery anymore. We know they're for sale to the highest bidder. Now, whoever values that property more than the other ones is going to say, come on over. I still think Paramount's probably got the inside track because I don't know if Netflix is going to want to go to where Paramount's probably willing to go to, you know, bolster their library, and Netflix is already pretty well established there. But yeah, it's just, is no stability.
I think Netflix is more willing to spend than we give them credit for, because one of the things Netflix has always stayed in front of the next step. There have been so many times where we've been, even on this show, where we've talked about X, Y, and Z streaming services coming, they're doing their own thing. Netflix better watch out. And every time we try to declare Netflix dead, they come back stronger than ever. And you're seeing it. Their original content, their films are showing up in movie theaters now. They're winning Emmys. They're doing a ton. So I wouldn't be surprised if Netflix is willing to get into a bidding war to a point over Warner Brothers Discovery, if for no other reason than to own those IPs. Because that's the name of the game right now, is IPs. What are the intellectual properties that your production company has? And if you buy out Warner Brothers Discovery, you know, you have DC, you have Harry Potter, you have so many, you have Studio Ghibli, you have A24, you have Cartoon Network, you have, you know, all of this stuff. And that's what, you know, that's what drives folks right now is IPs. That's what drives the movie theater business right now is IPs. You know, say what you want about Superman or Fantastic Four, they still drove the movie theater market for a good chunk of time. And it's just the way it is. So I wouldn't be surprised if Netflix goes for it.
Anyway, we will see.
All right, we're going to take our last commercial break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the biggest story in entertainment, as well as say goodbye to a Hollywood legend. All of that coming your way, plus what we've been watching. You're listening to Bandwagon Nerds here on the ChairShot Radio Network, part of thechairshot.com.
Why should you visit thechairshot.com? Thechairshot.com is your home for hard-hitting reviews, news, opinion, and analysis with attitude. Why? Because you're smarter than the average fan. TheChairShot.com. Always use your head.
Welcome back, everyone, to Bandwagon Nerds here on the ChairShot Radio Network, part of TheChairShot.com. Patrick O'Dowd, PC Tunney, David Ungar. Head over to ProWrestlingTees.com/TheChairShot for all of your ChairShot swag needs. Gentlemen, it's been a week in the world of entertainment, and both on the screen and in our world of politics. And this story intertwine. That's right, folks. We're going to talk about Jimmy Kimmel, and we're going to talk about the indefinite suspension of Jimmy Kimmel over comments made during one of his shows regarding what some would say in their opinion is about Charlie Kirk. Others would argue that it's more about how the president was responding to how he was, quote, holding up during Charlie Kirk's death. As a result of Charlie Kirk's death, I'm gonna just say this right now. What I'm about to talk about and say, and we say this in jest a lot of times, but my opinions on this matter do not reflect the thoughts and opinions of the other panelists on this show or the ChairShot Radio Network. Because I think that's very important for me to clarify before I talk about this, because this was a huge news story. This is a very polarizing news story. To me, it is a very concerning news story. Basically, Nexstar and Sinclair, the two largest station groups that wield influence in ABC, pulled Jimmy Kimmel in light of these comments during his opening monologue. They exerted a lot of influence that seems to be in reaction to the chairman of the FCC, Brendan Carr, threatening some sort of action against ABC and those affiliated networks, be it, you know, taking their broadcasting license away, so on and so forth. Also important to note that Nexstar is in the in the midst of trying to acquire some more broadcasting companies. Nexstar and Sinclair are both lobbying the FCC for some changes in regulation. And so while the backdrop of this joke, which again, I would argue if you actually watch the footage, isn't celebrating anything to do with a man's shooting. It was pointing out the hypocrisy of a man's reaction. Appears to have, on some level, some strong government influence that pulled it down. Now, since that story has first broke, reports are also out there that Jimmy Kimmel and Disney have begun talks to, on some level, reach an agreement and revive the show. Who knows where those go or where those will lead? I can tell you that the reason why Disney is doing this, because Disney owns ABC, is that reports are that Disney lost upwards of $4 billion in dropping Jimmy Kimmel. Now, that's all report and hearsay. I don't have anything that's listed out there. I do know there was a big action of people dropping Disney Plus subscriptions. Everybody here knows, if you've listened to me for more than 5 seconds, or if you've listened to Dave for more than 5 seconds, that we are very much people who have supported Disney in many ways over the years, be that going to see Disney films, Star Wars, Marvel. You know, those are the big two. The Alien franchise, which is part of the Hulu family now at this point, and Fox and FX. I have waffled so hard. And vacationing. Like, I give Disney annually money to stay at their resorts to vacation on their properties. And so as I sit here and express concern about a government that seems to be able to wield power over companies to pull somebody who says things that they don't like, that is very concerning to me. The other thing that is really interesting is there's been a lot of argument from the right saying, you know, this happened to Gina Carano, this happened here, you know, that James Woods has been canceled, Tim Allen was canceled, that all these people have lost their jobs. Perhaps. And yes, Disney fired Gina Carano, but Roseanne. They didn't fire Gina Carano under pressure from the United States government. And that is a very big difference. And that is the difference in what we are talking about when we are talking about censorship, because we are getting dangerously close to state-controlled media. And you, like, word has just come out that the Pentagon is making people sign pledges, news corporations sign pledges that they can only report what the Pentagon tells them to report and is approved. And if they don't, that they will lose their broadcasting privileges. These are the things that authoritarian governments do, and that is extremely concerning for the company that's giving us Andor, which is getting a lot of publication right now because it's all about the rise of fascism and fighting fascism. There's a lot of concern and consternation that is happening, not because this is an actor says something horrible and lost their job over it. It's that somebody made a joke and the government put pressure on that company to get rid of them. Disney bowed. Michael Eisner, of all people. Like, and that dude, I don't like Michael Eisner. Michael Eisner being critical of something that Disney does is just mind-boggling. And to be like, I agree with Michael Eisner is crazy to me. Oh, God. Rand Paul. I was, like, expressed concern about this. I'm like, if you've lost Rand Paul and a couple of the other, there's been a few other conservative folks who have, like, been like, this is bad. You're in trouble. So I just find this extraordinarily concerning. I hope Jimmy Kimmel gets back on air. I know it's going to be purely a financial reason because Disney is losing money over this and no company wants to lose money. I'm not going to ask either of you to give any thoughts or anything about it if you don't want to. I just felt it was very important for me to share my view on this and where I see this being concerning with what could happen in the type of comedy we see, the type of films we see, and just what it could mean for all of us. So that is my concern.
My concern on this isn't so much directed towards Jimmy Kimmel per se. He's a symptom of the disease. And I'm not talking about that he did anything wrong. What I am talking about is the fact that this administration is attacking the First Amendment. They're attacking freedom of speech. They're attacking freedom of press. Like the example you just gave about, and it's not the entirety of the federal government. I recognize that, but it is the Pentagon, and it is specifically the Department of Defense, Department of War, whatever you want to talk about, where they are saying you are not allowed to, you can only report the stuff that we say you can report. It goes beyond that, Pat, though. They're not allowed to obtain anything that's not authorized by then. And I think that this does tie into unidentified history. You know, we had the big hearing. There was the big release of this video that showed, you know, whatever the video is or isn't. And there's multiple theories as to what is there. This got dropped out of nowhere about a possible Hellfire missile being deflected by a UAP. That wasn't science fiction. That was real. They knew nothing about that. This was a dead drop. Somebody anonymously gave this to a congressman who showed it. So, yeah, they're cracking down on all this stuff because it makes them look bad. But you've got that. You've got now Trump issues an executive order that reclassifies. And I'm not going to say reclassified, demotes NASA from a scientific organization to a spy agency. All this stuff goes to censorship. It all goes to a limitation on the First Amendment, the freedom of the press, and all that stuff. And it's very concerning that, like you're saying, this is getting dangerously close to censorship. And if you're not concerned about that as a citizen of the United States, then I don't know what to tell you, because that's a big deal. I mean, that you're talking about the basic, most basic right that's out there. Jimmy Kimmel didn't say anything that would qualify as hate speech that could be regulated. There are elements of free speech that can be regulated. None of that happened here. But yeah, on the Disney side of it, when you're a company that's that big and you bow to this, you send the wrong message to everybody who supports you. And like you're saying, Pat, we're big Disney supporters. I didn't cancel Disney Plus because of, you know, I just saved all this money by doing the Disney bundle. But I'll tell you what I did do.
Well, and we need it, and we use it for our job. Hold on. I know. Sorry. I didn't mean to chime in to like take your thought, but we use it for this show. Like, we use it for the show and our jobs.
Right. I did. I will say this. I sold all my Disney stock. You know, it wasn't a ton of it. But I did what a lot of people did. You know, now I'm not going to get rid of Disney Plus because I use it for too much, but I will sell all my Disney stock. You know, my wife wanted me to go to Disneyland with her, like, I don't know, next weekend or the weekend after. And I thought to myself, it's like, you know, it's a lot of money that I, and even she goes, I'll pay for all of this. Like, I just don't feel it. I don't feel it right now. I don't want to do it right now. So when you're losing your core fans like that, and they lost a lot of them. I mean, a lot of people did what I did and sold their stock. They took a major hit for that. And, you know, when you look at the stance that they put up against DeSantis in Florida, which was, you know, not the same, but comparable, and then you just cave to Trump. That, look, when you've got one individual controlling all three branches of government, that's a big problem. And that's what you have right now. He's got control of the legislative, executive, and judicial branches. And people are scared of that. And I don't blame them. I don't blame them. But somebody's got to say this is wrong, and you need a company with the strength of the Walt Disney Company of all places to say, no, man, we're not going to do this just because. Come at us, bro, with your retaliation, and we'll see what happens with this. But they didn't do that, and that's a big problem. That's my soapbox.
It's a very volatile situation right now that could get even worse, right? Like, I don't know what's coming next is really interesting. Regardless of what, you know, side of the aisle you stand on, this is a little ridiculous. One thing I thought was interesting, though, was like in the wake of Colbert being and The Late Show being canceled, like some of these networks have been waiting for anything to get rid of some of these late night shows, though, too. Like, they're not making money. Like, the only person that's going to survive the late night show stuff likely will be Jimmy Fallon, just because he has a online presence, social media presence, YouTube channel presence, clip presence, short presence, musical presence. You can see he's already doing another show. So just to look at it from another perspective too, but like the major story here is this regulation from the government that just doesn't seem correct.
Do you think with Fallon, do you think that when Lorne retires or calls it, that could impact his career? Because I know they're very closely tied together.
Who's going to be in charge of NBC Universal when Lorne retires? That's the question.
Sure. I mean, he's been doing SNL for what, 50 years now with like one break?
I could see Jimmy Fallon being in charge of the network, not just Saturday Night Live.
That's fair.
So, maybe it's like, hey, Jimmy, we're going to cancel the Tonight Show, but here's your new office, by the way.
That's possible. Okay. I don't want to belabor this any further than we need to. I said this to the group. I told them that we were going to talk about this on today's show, and I wanted to make sure that they knew. I didn't want anybody to be uncomfortable knowing that we were going to talk about this. And I want to say that the last thing I want to say, and I think Tani made a good point on it, this really is bigger than your political affiliation. And the thing that I, the, I think is important to pay attention to is just because you don't like the person that the government is now silencing, that's not the point. The point is that the government is the one that's doing it. And if the government sets this precedence, and I don't want this to happen out of a Democratic thing, but the examples that folks give of other prominent conservative actors, famous people, voices and stuff, none of them were ever silenced by the government from being on your television screen. They were fired by their employer. And big secret, a lot of those folks found other avenues and other companies to work for that were more than happy to put them on. And when you hear some of the things that Brian Kilmeade is saying on Fox and just having to issue a weak-ass public apology and nary a peep, that's the other problem, is that it's dangerous. It's dangerous for a government to wield that kind of power. Last thought, Dave, and then we'll go into something a little different.
I just want to add, and I shared this with the guys in the Unidentified History chat, that our focus is in the wrong place as a country right now. We're trying to focus on controlling certain narratives, controlling speech, censoring things, talking about Charlie. Meanwhile, over in China, I don't know if you saw this, they actually developed an artificial sun, and they were able to maintain its temperature for 17 minutes. That's a big deal. We're nowhere close to that. You know, I'm thinking like Spider-Man 2, the power of the sun in the palm. The Chinese did it. This is a game-changing energy revolution that we're nowhere even thinking about that, because our focus is all this internal stuff that's going on. And it's hugely dangerous to us as society and a country if we are just asleep at the wheel and getting passed by these guys. I just wanted to throw that out there to make it.
Okay. Let's move on. Last story of the day. A Hollywood. Last week we paid tribute to somebody who, I think gave us great memory. Polly, I can't remember her last name.
Polly Holiday.
Polly Holiday, that's right. I loved her from Gremlins, Kiss My Grits, all that fun stuff. This week, I think it was Monday or Tuesday this week, or this past week, we lost Robert Redford. And again, Robert Redford lived a very long life. So this is not like some shock or surprise. But when you want to talk about a titan of Hollywood, particularly in the 60s, 70s, and 80s, Robert Redford was as influential, as powerful as anybody out there. He was an activist. He believed in helping others. He was involved in numerous charities. And, you know, for this show, you know, he was Alexander Pierce as part of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. He's part of one of my all-time favorite sports movies. Period. The Natural. I love The Natural.
Yeah.
I'll watch The Natural. Like when he died, I posted the home run video and the music, and apparently the Cleveland Browns scored. And you know, it's just a titan of film here in Hollywood. So Dave, I'm gonna go to you first. Name Tony, a couple Tony's of your going, favorite. He's okay.
He's going through it right now.
He'll be back.
He'll be all right.
That's why I love football season and bandwagon nerd season. But anyway, what if you could pick a few of your favorite Robert Redford films or moments, what would be some of your favorite Robert Redford works?
Natural, for sure. That's my favorite Robert Redford movie of all time, and it's not even close. I think I loved the work he did in, what was it, All the President's Men, right? Isn't that the movie that they did it with about the Watergate situation? Him and
Dustin Hoffman.
Dustin Hoffman. You know, that one really stands out to me. Everything he did in the MCU, because he was a great Alexander Pierce, and
yes,
I loved his role in that, and just the way that he portrayed that character, and you look at guys who could pull this off, and he was like the only one who could really do that. And I'm trying to think, I'd have to look up his filmography to see like the other stuff that he did that really
Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid.
Yeah,
funny
right.
Girl, funny lady.
Yeah.
He was so, like, he was in so many great things. It's always funny. I love IMDb, but I hate it. As I tried to go through and, like, see if there's ones. Legal Eagles, like, little-known popular film. But, like, you know,
I'm looking it up, but
he's the face of one of those popular memes of all time. But Sneakers, Indecent Proposal, Out of Africa.
Yeah,
but you look at all the President's Men, the Great Gatsby. He was in the Great Gatsby. Jeremiah Johnson. Butch Cassidy and Sundance Kid is a fucking awesome. The Virginian.
Think about it. He starts in 1960 as his first movie. So he was around forever.
He's in a great episode of Alfred Hitchcock.
The Condor is another one. Brubaker, there's one that
is okay. So I don't want you to rattle off everything, because Tony gets to talk about any favorite Robert Redford films he has. So if we rattle them all off, he won't be able to share any. The Twilight Zone episode that he did is a great one too, where he plays Death. That's a good episode. Tony, some great Robert Redford films that you enjoy, or just moments from Robert Redford that stick in your brain.
You guys mentioned a bunch of them. Obviously, Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid is one of the great movies ever. The Natural comes to mind. You know, then he comes back and does like The Horse Whisperer late in his career, The Last Castle, Spy Game. He was Brad Pitt before Brad Pitt was, he was the original. Like, Brad Pitt is the next Robert Redford, right? And it's interesting they worked so much together in a lot of different movies. So yeah, Lost a great one.
Yeah, I haven't watched. The Natural is on my what you watching to do list. The Untouchables also, the television show, not the movie, the TV series.
Wow, Indecent Proposal. I mean, there's one we didn't mention. Yeah. Yeah, or did you mention it?
I mentioned it. It was definitely one of those that made huge news back in the day. But yeah, so raise a glass, folks. Happy trails to a Hollywood icon. We wish, you know, goodbye, Robert Redford. And with that, let's head into our final segment of the show. What you watching? PC Tunney is fist pumped. The Green Bay Packers have redeemed themselves in some way. He's waving his hands off. I don't know. But Tunney's just telling me to pace myself. Come on. I got to watch the Bears lose to the fucking Cowboys this afternoon. I'm not like, let me live vicariously through your joy of being a part of a, you know, a fan of a franchise.
Well, the last meltdown was because we gave up 10 points in 37 seconds. So let's get back to bandwagon nerds. This week, what I've been watching, Dinner Time Live has gotten excellent. There's two shows a week. There was two last week. There will be two this week. Check that out. There was one other thing, and I can't remember now. It's been such a day. We'll just keep it moving along.
The Strongar?
I'm watching the L.A. Rams blow it out their ass against the Philadelphia Eagles. The Commanders are doing well. No problems there. But I think like this week, Alien Earth had their penultimate episode, which was a polarizing
episode. I haven't watched an episode yet.
Yeah, polarizing episode, but they've got it set up for the finale coming up this Tuesday, which I think will be awesome. I wish Ray was here because I want to talk to him about Gen V. I did watch the first two episodes of Gen V. There's a third one I need to get through. It's awesome. It's been really good so far. I love the fact that they really dealt with Chance Perdomo's death in a way that is central to the story. So it wasn't just like, oh, this happened and they moved on. His death is central to the story and what's going on. So yeah, Gen V's been really, really good. I'm looking forward to seeing what the rest of the season brings with that and how this is going to tie into The Boys season 5, final season.
Cool. I rewatched Superman this weekend, and unlike DJ, I do not loathe it as much as he apparently does.
He's a Snyder.
It's not, well, here's the thing. It's not the game changer that fans probably wanted it to be, but it's not the worst. Like, it's not nearly as bad as some would have you think it is. The only thing that ever bugged me is that there is a Snyderverse moment with the slow motion knocking the teeth out thing. But on the whole, it's a wholesome, fun Superman movie that I do not regret paying money to see at the theater, and was happy to see it again. Like, quit your bitching.
I'm watching
it
too.
Show.
I plan on watching it again too.
Currently paused on my television, I'm about halfway through, is 28 Years Later, now available on Netflix. So if you haven't seen that yet or just want to watch it again, what a dick. Mom's got cancer and you're fucking the teacher? Asshole? What the hell? Anyway.
Frank Wilde, great film, I guess.
Yeah, Danny Boyle, by the way, the cinematography and the use of color 28 Years Later is just outstanding, by the way. Outstanding, and all alone is worth the watch. So if you haven't checked out 28 Years Later, check it out, because it is the first of, I believe, a trilogy, part two coming out soon. Just a reminder, fellas, Marvel Zombies, all four episodes of Marvel Zombies release on September 24th. So that's coming in a couple of days, as well as, shoot, I lost, not another upcoming film, but just some good stuff coming along.
Don't forget,
isn't that Jude Law, Jason?
Don't forget. Witcher season 4 coming October 3rd.
God. Isn't
Hell
that
yeah,
Jude Law?
Witchers.
Jude Law Jason Bateman thing out right now on Netflix?
Yeah, it might be.
That's a good one. I remember the last thing I wanted to talk about. It was another thing I watch all the time and talk about, but I think they had one of the coolest pair of guests. Kill Tony this past week had Carrot Top and Triple H on the panel. If you've never watched Kill Tony before and you're a fan of comedy, just go to YouTube. Free YouTube, like the app. It's free, and you can watch it. Free.
It's no ESPN Unlimited, that's for sure.
Let me just say, too, the funniest fucking thing, and DP and I talk about this all the time. The numerous streaming apps that we all have, the numerous cable/satellite channels that we all have, the numerous digital channels you can get with a Batwing antenna, and here I am, the majority of the time, watching free YouTube.
I subscribe to channels, all kinds of YouTube channels, man. It's nuts. All right. Folks, I think that's going to do it for this week's edition of Bandwagon Nerds here on the Chairshot Radio Network, part of the Chairshot.com. Before we get out of here, though, let these fellas tell you how you can find them, listen to them, catch them on the Chairshot Radio Network, because they work hard and deserve to be put out there, even when Tunney is exasperated.
I got to go. Follow me at PC Tunney.
Oh, don't leave, Tunney. Don't leave.
No, he's out. That's fine. He's dealing with his deal. Dave, where do you find him?
You can find me on X at AttitudeAg, that is at AttitudeAGG, Facebook.com/AttitudeOfAggression, and at AttitudeOfAggression, all one word, on Instagram and on Threads.
And you can follow me on the social medias at WrestlingRealist, that is at WrestlingRealist. You can catch me every Monday, Tuesday, and occasional Wednesday here on the Chairshot Radio Network. Monday, of course, talk the nerdy stuff here on Bandwagon Nerds. Tuesdays, talking sports with Dave on the Four Corners podcast, and maybe we should get Tawny on there to just vent. Feels like he needs to vent. It's okay. Wisconsin is having a good year for professional sports. This is just a blip in the radar. And occasional Wednesdays with Greg DeMarco talking wrestling on the Greg DeMarco Show when we feel like it. That's going to do it for this week's edition of Bandwagon Nerds here on the Chairshot Radio Network, part of the Chairshot.com. Now get yourself out of the basement. Get some sun and give Superman a second chance. It was worth it. It's a fun little romp. Don't let the opinions of an angry dwarf named DJ upset it. Give it another watch. Have the fun that was intended out of the movie. This has been Bandwagon Nerds here on the Chairshot Radio Network, part of the Chairshot.
A little lost.
I'm not. You dropped this on your way out.
Something seems amiss.
Correct me if I'm wrong, Hobbs, but we had a deal.
No.
Those are your winnings, Slugger.
This is a gag, Hobbs. Pick it up. Get out of here.
If it isn't enough money, tell us what you've got in mind.
To hit away.
I thought I could rely on your honor, Hobbs.
You're about to.
You're a foolish, foolish man. You've forgotten something. Your past.
I don't care. Go on. Get on the phone.
No. It won't be necessary. I like the action.
Then let it ride.
You bastard.
You were right, Memo. We have met before.
You know, you're a lot weaker than I thought. What do you think this changes?
Why don't you have Max draw your picture? You can read about it in the morning paper.
You're yesterday's news, kid. You got a great gift of talent, but it's not enough. I think you're a loser.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.